this verse 11 is frequently just kind of quoted out of context by people as kind of a generic promise of God to prosper one's future. But the context is for those who have just experienced the severe judgment of God and have been taken away captive. And it's to them specifically that God offers up this promise of future blessing and hope. But the thing that you should remember is that Jeremiah foretells the exile will last longer than the people expect, 70 years. Okay? The next book we consider here is the book of Lamentations. And this follows immediately upon Jeremiah because tradition has that Jeremiah is the author. Although the text itself does not say this, the Hebrew title for the book is the very first word of the book, how, or the Hebrew is akah. Okay, so remember that for the Hebrew titles, it was always the first word in the written document. In this case, it's akah, how. And so Lamentations begins, how lonely sits the city that was full of people, how like a widow she has become, she who was great among the nations, she who was a princess among the provinces, has become a slave. Okay. So the Greek title given to this then in the Septuagint was threnoi, and so that's translated into our English as Lamentations. So the title really, for our English title, describes the content. The Hebrew title expresses the anguish itself. Okay, how lonely sits the city. This particular book of the Bible is still used today by Jews. They read it on a special day in July, typically, according to their lunar calendar, the traditional lunar calendar, to remember or commemorate the fall of Jerusalem in 586, also the destruction of Jerusalem another time in 70 AD by the Romans, and then also to remember the Holocaust of World War II. We as Christians use the book of Lamentations. Which season do you think that we would use the book of Lamentations? Yes, Lent. Appropriate for a penitential season, and most specifically during Holy Week. The last 3 days of Holy Week is when Lamentations is written. The Hebrew does not identify the author. The Latin Vulgate does, however. The title says the Lamentations of Jeremiah the prophet. Okay. So although the Hebrew is anonymous, all the evidence does seem to point to Jeremiah as the author. The very, very ancient tradition holds him as the author, not just the Vulgate, but even the Jewish Targums do. It's very clear that whoever wrote Lamentations was an eyewitness to the destruction of the city, the deportation of the people. Very, very dramatic imagery used here of what took place. Mothers eating their children during the siege and so forth. So it's obviously been burned into the memory of whoever wrote this. And there are similarities in the style of writing and certainly the tone of Jeremiah, who was the weeping prophet, and then those theological themes. Add to this, 2 Chronicles 35, verse 25 says that Jeremiah was the composer of laments. Doesn't necessarily say he was the composer of this book, which has laments, but that he was a composer of laments. And so everything seems to point to him. Okay, what is the purpose of this? Well, just as Jeremiah's earlier prophecies had been used to prepare Judah for judgment, prepare them to expect tragedy, now after the tragedy has befallen them, he helps Judah to deal with it, to grieve the loss, and expresses words on behalf of the Jews here of their loss. Okay, essentially what this is then, stylistically, is a funeral dirge. It's a funeral dirge for the city of God. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. And so you've got a lot of short, almost sobbing lines. It's like someone who is sobbing and crying. You can just say so much and then you have to gasp and sob. It's expressed that way stylistically. And there's a lot of what we call dramatic contrast in Lamentations, that you contrast and compare the previous state of the people and the city with what she has now become. And just it's kind of like, you know, what could have been, if we would have just been faithful, what could have been, but now what is as a result of this tragedy and this judgment. Also, something that's important for you to note is that the book of Lamentations is organized as acrostic poetry. Okay. Acrostic poetry means that the lines correspond to letters of the alphabet. Okay, so in this case, even the first line, the title, Akkad there, starts with an aleph. So you've got each line corresponding to the alphabet. Aleph, Beth, Gimel, Daleth, so forth of the Hebrew alphabet. And there are five books, okay? And those five books then each have 22 lines, four of the books, I should say, 22 lines. And then the fifth book has several cycles through the acrostic. So what is this saying? What's the reason behind the acrostic? Well, it's a poetic device. This is poetry. Sometimes this was used for dirges and so forth. But it's also demonstrating that this was thought through. Okay, so it just didn't come out spontaneously. That this is a well-prepared, meditated piece. So it's not just the impulsive grief expressed by the author, but it's been composed in a thoughtful way as well, as he reflects upon the fall of Jerusalem. Okay? So that's about all that I have for Lamentations here. Okay. Well, let's take a look then at the exile and then the prophets who are in exile. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel were contemporaries, although Daniel's ministry and what is covered in Daniel goes much later than Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Jeremiah carried out his ministry, though, in Jerusalem, speaking to the people. Ezekiel and Daniel carry out their prophetic ministries in Babylon. So they're already in Babylon. They're part of the exile, part of the those who are exiles. Okay. With Ezekiel, his ministry is about 593 to 571. He was part of the deportation of 597, but he doesn't begin his ministry until later. So he doesn't begin right away once he gets to Babylon. Okay, but you see that his ministry here covers over both before the fall and after the fall, before 586 and after 586. So you've got Ezekiel here down there at the very end. Ezekiel, as we seen with the other prophets, carries out that classic traditional message of addressing the broken covenant, how God's people have broken the covenant, and thus the judgment upon that. The difference is, though, that he is speaking that word from Babylon. And you have the book of Ezekiel here divided up into two main sections. The pivot point is chapter 33. And everything before chapter 33 is before 586, and what follows chapter 33 is after 586. And thus, the bulk of material here before chapter 33 will be, in our Lutheran understanding, what we'd call law, condemnation, judgment. Similar to what we saw with Isaiah in chapters 1 to 39, afflicting the comfortable. That's what we have before chapter 33. And then you have this hinge and this transition after 586, and this will be primarily what we would call gospel, oracles of hope, oracles of comfort, oracles of restoration, so comforting the afflicted. So it's similar to Isaiah in that regard. Again, we've seen the different ways in which some of these prophets of God have been called directly by God. The last one we look at here is Ezekiel and his call. And the call of Ezekiel is given in chapter 2. So if you want to turn to Ezekiel chapter 2. And he said to me, "Son of man, stand on your feet, and I will speak to you." This is characteristic of Ezekiel's writings, where the Lord addresses him as Son of Man. Okay? So if you see that, you'll be able to recognize this is coming from Ezekiel, when the prophet is addressed as Son of Man. Okay? And in this call, then, God actually delivers to Ezekiel a scroll and has him eat it. Okay, so if you move down to verse 8, chapter 2, "But you, son of man, hear what I say to you. Do not be rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I give you. And when I looked, behold, a hand was stretched out to me, and behold, a scroll of a book was in it. And he spread it before me, and it had writing on the front and on the back. And there were written on it words of lamentation and mourning and woe. And he said to me," chapter 3, verse 1, "Son of man, eat whatever you find here. Eat this scroll and go speak to the house of Israel." So I opened my mouth, and he gave me this scroll to eat. And he said to me, "Son of man, feed your belly with this scroll that I feed you, and fill your stomach with it." Then I ate, and it was in my mouth as sweet as honey. And he said to me, Son of man, go to the house of Israel and speak with my words to them. So here you have a calling of the prophet, and it's clear, once again, he is to be the mouthpiece. But as earlier with Isaiah, you had the lips touched with the coal, purified. With Jeremiah, the Lord himself touching the mouth of Jeremiah, saying, now you speak my words. So here with Ezekiel, the Lord gives him his word, the scroll, and has him eat it. So he, in a sense, ingests the word of God so that he might speak it forth. That's the imagery here of Ezekiel's call. So it's important for you to distinguish between these different characters and the way in which God calls them for prophetic ministry. Okay? Even before that call, though, in chapter 1, you have a vision of the Lord and the Lord's glory. And this is the vision that's been made popular through the Negro spiritual. Ezekiel saw the wheel, you know, way up in the middle of the air. Well, this is the vision here. What's that speaking of? It is, first of all, a theophany, a vision of God. So just as we saw Isaiah receiving this vision of God upon his throne, so Ezekiel has a similar vision of Yahweh upon his throne, the throne seated upon the curve of the firmament. Okay, so God as Lord and creator of creation here. He sees the creator, the awesome God. And attending to Yahweh here are four attendants. Okay, we would call them cherubim. And that's in fact what Ezekiel later calls them when they reappear in like chapter 10. But they are living beings. They're just simply called living beings. And they are kind of a assemblage of different creatures. So you've got a face of a man, a face of an ox, and of a lion, and also of an eagle, okay? And wings and so forth. I think that this is just his way of expressing the vision of the throne room of God and these four living creatures that are not human. They are specially created beings. And these are the attendants to the throne. Okay? These reappear then, among other places, but especially in the book of Revelation. Okay? Revelation chapter 6, where John is transported up into the heavenly temple, the throne room of God, and they're always attending to the throne of God, the four living creatures, and then you also have the 24 elders and so forth, but the four living creatures here. If you remember, in Solomon's temple, in the Holy of Holies, there were images of four creatures, the four cherubim, because there were the two cherubim on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant there, and two that then were attendants, actually statues on the ground. And so this again is the image of the throne of God. He's attended by these four living creatures. So what about the wheels? What are the wheels? The wheels that are turning wheels within wheels. This is the fiery chariot of God. So he's coming in his royal chariot. So this is the image of God coming to call Ezekiel. And it's God in all of his glory coming in his royal chariot now to speak to Ezekiel and to call him to be his prophet. Now, just as Isaiah was a priest, so also Ezekiel is a priest. And just as the priests had access then into the temple, so now, even though he is in Babylon, Ezekiel is brought, in a sense, into the true temple, the throne room of God, as a priest. But He is called not only to be a priest, but also to be a prophet. And it's significant in the early verses of chapter 1, it says that Ezekiel was 30 years old, and that's when the priests would begin their ministry at age 30. So he's far from the Jerusalem temple, but he's being brought into the true temple to carry out a priestly ministry and now a prophetic ministry as well. Okay, so this is just kind of the depiction, artist depiction from the Crossways series of this vision. Now, Ezekiel is speaking to the people here in Babylon, and he's going to address the judgment and the deportation of the masses to Babylon, especially with the fall of Jerusalem, the fire there, the captivity. And remember, he's part of the second deportation of 597. So he will speak of the coming deportation in 587 or 586 here, which will occur in chapter 33. So before 586, you have his prophecies of the people being deported to Babylon. After chapter 33, after 586 here, he will begin giving them oracles of hope for restoration from their spiritual death, if you will, here, and the return back to the land. So let's take a look at that according to the graphics here. Again, Ezekiel speaks in Babylon along the Kibar River, or irrigation canal. It's one of the settlement communities of the deported Jews. And one other thing that I should say here, I've just been assuming it, but it should be explicit. The thing that is different with this deportation that will come of the Jews compared to the deportation of the 10 tribes of Israel is that the Jews stay together. They remain a community in Babylon. They retain their cultural and ethnic identity and community. Whereas with the deportation of the 10 tribes, they were dispersed and forced to intermarry and lose their distinctive ethnic, cultural, and religious identity. That's not the case here. So you've got kind of these immigrant communities, these exile communities in Babylon, where they can continue to carry out their community life as Jews. Okay? So Ezekiel here is pointing to the community that will take place there, and he's saying that God will bring judgment by deporting the people. Ezekiel is another one of these guys who does a lot of the object lessons to get the point across. And one of them is a little clay model of Jerusalem. And that's what this is depicting here. They didn't have satellite TV, obviously, and CNN and so forth. So the Lord used Ezekiel to, in a sense, give a play-by-play blow to the people here in Babylon, the Jews who were already deported there, of what is going on in Jerusalem. So this clay brick, which he kind of carved into a little city, a little Jerusalem, that's what's depicted there, he had in front of the people in Babylon as kind of the satellite broadcasting of what's going on in Jerusalem. And so he you know, puts little army figures around it. The siege is taking place. Ladders up to it, indicating that the siege, they're breaching the walls, they're going over the walls and so forth. And so he's depicting for the people in Babylon, the Jews, not the Babylonians, for the Jews, what's happening while it's taking place here. And of course, the people in Babylon, who are Jews, don't accept it. They think this guy's just nuts, he's just crazy. But the message here is the judgment's going to fall in the holy city, upon the holy city. He also has a vision in chapters 10 and 11 of this chariot of God, the glory of the Lord, which first appears in chapter 1, departing from the temple and coming to Babylon. So, even before the destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem, before the mass deportation of people in 587/6, Yahweh himself comes to Babylon in his glory. And it's a powerful scene that you see there in those chapters. Ezekiel is transported into the Jerusalem temple, and he sees there the Shekinah glory of God, glory of the Lord, coming out of the Holy of Holies into the holy place. And it stops there. And the priests are kind of busy doing their thing in the holy place. And it's Ezekiel saying, doesn't anyone notice? The Lord is leaving. They're also busy doing their priestly rites. No one's even paying attention. God is leaving the temple. And the glory just kind of halts there and hovers. And then it moves out of the temple building into the courtyard of the temple. And everybody's going about their business. Nobody's even paying attention. Nobody even notices God is departing from his temple. And then Ezekiel sees the glory of the Lord go east from the temple. It just leaves the temple, leaves Jerusalem, heads east. And the message is, God is now going to dwell among his people, not in Jerusalem, not where Solomon's temple is. He has departed the temple. It has become so corrupt that he's left Jerusalem, and now he will dwell among his people in Babylon. That's the message there. Okay? Now, Ezekiel has a number of different pantomimes. Again, these kind of object lessons, action lessons, to communicate his message, just as we saw with Jeremiah. And some of them are pretty odd. I mean, sometimes as you read some of the things that Ezekiel does, you think, you know, what was he taking? What was he smoking? But these are reasonable, you know, understandable revelations from the Lord. It's just in a very, very unconventional way that Ezekiel communicates this. First of all, we have up here, Ezekiel is told by the Lord to wrap himself up in ropes, to be bound like a captive. And he is to lie for 390 days on his left side and 40 days on his right side. So well over a year, he lies bound on one side and then the other, as people are just kind of going around doing their thing. Remember, this is in Babylon. And the message here is that God has a bondage for his people that will last a long time. It's similar to what we saw with Jeremiah. It's not going to be a short duration, but it's going to be a long time. Lying for over a year on one side and then the other, willingly, not because you have to, but just willingly, is a long time. It's a long time even if you're unwilling to do that. So the point here is the bondage will take a long time. And the point for the people there in Babylon, and this is before the 586, so They were just thinking, oh, this is going to pass here. You know, we'll be heading home soon, back to Jerusalem, the city with the temple and so forth. And the message here is, no, it's going to be a long captivity. While he was doing that as well, he still had to eat and so forth. But he also demonstrated to the people what the captivity would be like, in that he only fed himself rations. Okay, so just what the most minimal of food, rations, that's the bowl here, cooked, and the fuel used was dung. Okay, so this is what poor people, what refugees survive on. Okay, this is what prisoners survive on. This is what they're going to live on. So again, it's speaking of the future judgment. In another instance, he cuts his hair and divides it up into three different sections equally. And one of the sections represents the people who will die from starvation in the siege. Another section represents those who will die in the actual attack upon Jerusalem when the walls are breached. And the third represents those who will be taken captive. And they are kind of, that hair is dispersed. And so the message here is the judgment is going to be significant. Two-thirds of the people of Jerusalem are going to die. And historically, that's what happened. One-third from the starvation and disease of the siege, one-third from being slaughtered, one-third are deported. Again, this is all before 586. And then he does another little drama, okay? And he acts out someone who's in the siege in Jerusalem, who is packing up, taking just the bare necessities, the staples, the essentials for life, packs a bag, and finds along the wall a little hole to crawl through and to try to escape, to get through the siege of the enemy. So again, depicting the judgment.